In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In 2016, it was speculated there was a connection with the murder of Seth Rich, a 27-year-old Democratic National Committee employee, in the DNC email release to WikiLeaks. The controversy swirling around this event continues to today as commentators and journalists are forced to retract their stories and issue public apology when they suggest that Seth Rich was murdered for releasing the DNC emails to WikiLeaks. A recent article by PolitiFact connected with the Poynter Institute titled Mueller Report Aims to Squash WikiLeaks Seth Rich Conspiracy Theory ends with, quote, investigators acknowledge that they can't be totally sure how those files were transferred. The material might have been downloaded or hand-delivered, but one thing is for certain, it wasn't Seth Rich. In a Dutch News interview in August of 2016, Assange said he wouldn't disclose if Seth Rich was the source of the DNC emails, but essentially said these are the risks that are faced when contributing to WikiLeaks. The police believed Seth Rich was a victim of a botched robbery. Bruises on Rich's hands and face showed signs of a struggle, and his wallet, watch, and cell phone were not taken. The emails of John Podesta, the former chairman of the 2016 Hillary Clinton presidential campaign, were among the DNC emails published by WikiLeaks. He previously served as chief of staff to Bill Clinton and counselor to Barack Obama. In those emails, John Podesta writes the word pizza 78 times and cheese another 90 or so times. Citizen journalists launched investigations and unearthed disturbing pedophile-related images, artwork, and powerful associations about a pizza restaurant owner's Instagram account and archived it before it was switched to private. This was the Pizzagate catalyst that sparked outrage across the world and framed Comet Ping Pong within the crosshairs of a potential child trafficking pedophile network. Some believe the unraveling of the Pizzagate thread also cost Hillary Clinton the 2016 election. To some, Pizzagate was seen as a hemorrhaging national security emergency, connecting pedophilia and child trafficking into politics and the deep state. In the last few years, the mind-blowing media backpedaling and behind-the-scenes scrambling associated with Pizzagate was unlike anything seen before. Whenever the word Pizzagate was uttered, it was condemned by the ubiquitous term fake news, implying, we're asking you not to think for yourself. For many, the evidence in the emails are enough to research deeper, but what will it take for an official investigation to commence? By the end of 2016, the mainstream and social media were likely ordered to distract, censor, and condemn anything related to Pizzagate. This level of response exposed to the world the staggering control of a highly organized, bought and paid for fourth column in the United States. Many suspect that one phase of this action was to morph Pizzagate into Russiagate. Even if most people didn't learn about Pizzagate until a gunman visited Comet Ping Pong, around that time, the citizen journalist online investigation was at its peak, and the mainstream attention brought public focus onto the reality of child trafficking networks within the government, high society, and public institutions. We hear a collage of voices that include past guests Dr. Lori Handrahan, author of Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape, and Nick Bryant, author of The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. We'll also hear related news gathering from sources such as YouTube investigator Titus Frost and Reality Check with Ben Swan. This 1 hour will barely address an entrenched system of child trafficking and abuse in the United States and worldwide. Let's have a listen.
Well, the Franklin scandal is about an interstate pedophile network that flew kids from coast to coast and pandered them to the rich and the powerful. And a lot of the kids were taken out of orphanages. some of the kids were taken out of foster care, and some of the kids were runaways that had fallen through the cracks. And ultimately, these children were pandered to some of the richest and most powerful people in the United States of America. And the network was eventually covered up by at least two grand juries and possibly a third grand jury in Washington, D.C., with the help of course, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Secret Service.
Among the key players you mentioned is Larry King, who was involved in running the pedophile network, but he also was involved with embezzling $40 million out of the Franklin Credit Union. Can you tell listeners about that?
The Franklin Credit Union was a lower socioeconomic credit union in Omaha, Nebraska, North Omaha, which is Omaha's economically depressed segment. And it was designed to give loans to lower socioeconomic people in North Omaha. And suddenly, $40 million was missing from the credit union.
It's a lot of money.
Well, a credit union that was only supposed to have $2.5 million in it. And so there were $40 million missing. And the Nebraska Senate decided to investigate the $40 million looting of the credit union. And ultimately what happened was when the Senate subcommittee formed, social services came to them, people in social services. And social services had known about this pedophile network for a number of years, because kids had come forward and said that they'd been flown here, or and they talked about pedophilic parties amongst the rich and the powerful. And these were lower socioeconomic kids. So, and they provided a lot of detail concerning where they were flown and who was at these parties. So social services was bringing these allegations to both state and federal authorities, and they were just simply ignored.
Well, you were on In Other News about 6 years ago discussing your efforts to rescue your daughter from sex trafficking when you were living in Maine. Would you please give listeners a summary of those past difficult and tragic altercations?
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you for doing that interview. I really appreciated you as a journalist, and I often refer to your interview when I'm trying to get other journalists to cover what appears to me to be a very high-profile pedophile ring that's been controlling the state of Maine for many years. And I also share that interview you did 6 years ago with investigators when I'm trying to get them interested. I have not seen my daughter since she was 4 years old. She is now 12. She has no idea where her mother is, why her mother isn't raising her, protecting her, taking care of her. In 5 years, she will be ready to go to college, and I am now penniless and living in poverty. I've been unemployed since my job was wrongly terminated at American University. The reason was that my daughter's father and his lawyer fell when he stalked me at American University for nearly 2 years, and American University asked me not to report the crime and just to endure it and maintain high professional status, which I did in order to maintain my job. But in the end, they terminated me, saying I couldn't keep my personal life off campus, which is, of course, illegal when you notify an institution that you're a victim of domestic violence. They have to take, measures to protect you within the institution, and American University did not. In any case, what I'm concerned about is that I'd like my daughter to go to college, and I have no way of making that happen. Well, both she and I are living in poverty. She, of course, has been severely abused all these years. It's a very difficult situation.
So when the Senate subcommittee formed, social services talked to the senators and said, the $40 million, that's only part of the problem. That credit union is a front for an interstate pedophile network that is flying children from coast to coast. So then the senators started to look into those allegations, too.
You have to hand it to social services people that came forward. I wondered, so then they began the investigation into the pedophile network, but did they use social services investigative work and papers?
Yes. Social services provided the senators with a lot of paperwork, paperwork that would ultimately be sealed by two grand juries and paperwork that I ultimately ended up with. And the kids that come forward provide a tremendous amount of detail about their abuse. And social services was very concerned and knew exactly what was going on. And this documentation was eventually given to the senators.
My background as a researcher, I mean, people often don't understand what PhDs do, but it's large-scale social science research, which is an investigator. I'm a trained investigator. And London School of Economics is applied social science. I didn't do a PhD in Elizabethan history or something like that. So it took me, with a PhD from one of the top research institutes in the world, about 3 years of researching this almost literally 24/7, 7 days a week. I mean, every morning before I get out of bed, as soon as I wake up, I say a prayer to God, and I say, you know, what am I going to do to help rescue my daughter today? And please direct me. And I spend hours fighting for her. And it took a long time to put the puzzle together. And when I first heard about Nick Bryan and Nebraska and Boys Town, I didn't want to believe it. I was told the story by a friend when my daughter was first raped, and I said, no, this is just one corrupt judge and one corrupt lawyer, and this can't be a state-run pedophile ring. And it is. It's Nebraska. And I believe there are links to Boys Town because the head of child protection, a man named Dan Despard, who's just recently been allowed to quietly walk out the back door from Health and Human Services sometime this summer, I believe because of what I've been raising. Dan Despard, who I believe is one of the key traffickers of children in the state of Maine, he had on his official Maine resume that he had whenever he went to do trainings around the country, or he went to Holland, for instance, to do trainings, which is concerning given the Minister of Justice's background there, but that's another show, perhaps. Dan Despard had on his official resume that he worked for Boys Town in New Hampshire and Vermont for 8 years. And I called Boys Town, I called 3 or 4 times, I talked to 3 or 4 different people just to verify it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Not only did Dan Despard never work for Boys Town, Boys Town never had programs in New Hampshire or Maine. Okay? So we alerted the commissioner and the governor that this man was lying about a key part of his resume, 8 years working for a place he never worked for. They didn't care. What, to me, it said was that he was hanging out a calling card for pedophiles and child trafficking, because why would you falsely affiliate yourself with an organization that was known for trafficking children in Nebraska?
Ooh, wow, right? Interesting, yeah.
Unless you were trying to, this is what intelligence services, you know, do and used to do, they'd put a personal ad in the newspaper, you know, and that would be the signal to meet at a certain place or a certain time. So my guess is that Dan Despard falsely reported that he worked for Boys Town on all of the trainings that he did, and any time he went to a speech or anything, because that was the way that he identified that he could get kids for you.
Hi, you're on the air.
I'm calling from Rockland County, New York, and I just listened to the program, and I don't think I've heard of anything more horrible. To think that we are trying to police the world, and here's something right in our own backyard. The corruption and the filth that's taking place under the guise of people who have authority over us is absolutely outrageous. God bless you. I am a person of faith, and I would definitely pass this on, and we will be in prayer for you.
I really
encourage and continue.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Minutes ago, a federal jury here in the Eastern District of New York returned verdicts convicting Keith Raniere on all counts in his federal indictment. With these convictions, Raniere stands convicted of racketeering, sex trafficking, and related crimes. Over the last 7 weeks, this trial has revealed that Raniere, who portrayed himself as a savant and a genius, was in fact a master manipulator, a con man, and the crime boss of a cult-like organization involved in sex trafficking, child pornography, extortion, compelled abortions, branding, degradation, and humiliation. His crimes and the crimes of his co-conspirators ruined marriages, careers, fortunes, and lives. The evidence proved that Ranieri was truly a modern-day Svengali. I want to thank the superb investigation and prosecution team that made his conviction possible. Assistant United States Attorneys Moira Kim Penza, Tanya Hajar, Kevin Trowell, Karen Orenstein, and Mark Lesko. Paralegals Terry Carby, Samantha Ward, Nicole Minaccio, and Alex Minsk. I want to thank our partners in the FBI, especially Special Agents Michael Weniger and Michael Lever. I want to thank our partners in IRS, HSI, and the New York State Police. I especially want to thank our colleagues in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Northern District of New York who made significant contributions to this effort.
Washington, D.C. James, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What a terrible ordeal this must have been for you.
It has been.
When this man walked into your restaurant with this gun firing multiple shots, no one was injured. You weren't there that day, right?
I was there earlier that day.
You knew things were reaching a fever pitch, but did you ever foresee that?
It had been building since before the election, so starting on November 4th, I started receiving messages on my Instagram that were just very bizarre and strange and accusing me of all kinds of falseness and conspiracy. And this built and built and built and built for over a month. And really, it's not just me that was involved. It was my staff who was harassed and attacked. They received Instagram messages, Facebook messages. Then it started to appear that images of children and other people were being taken from social media and blasted throughout the internet with this insane conspiracy idea filled with just lies about this impossible international conspiracy of human traffickers involving Hillary Clinton.
Oh my goodness. And you, and you're a Democratic donor. There's nothing illegal about that.
Mr. Alifantis has, on record, visited the White House at least 5 times, and so wouldn't be controversial to say that James is connected to some of the most important and influential people in Washington. In fact, here is a letter from Hillary Clinton thanking James for the dinner, cooking with the Fratelli Podesta, and here is another Instagram picture where James is photographing President Barack Obama at the White House, playing a little ping pong with a young child. James Alifantis is known as Jimmy Comet on Instagram, and online researchers discovered an incredible number of very strange photos, many with very young children, including very disturbing references found on his account. James's account has since been switched to private, but his posts were collected prior to him doing so. Many of the comments and hashtags made on the images of his Instagram account, and many other accounts linked to Mr. Alifantis and Comet Pizza, included code words well known and established by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to be codes used by those engaged in acts of pedophilia.
No. Doesn't make you a pedophile or somebody who's part of a child sex ring. One of the pictures that Trey showed in the report, people have been pointing to, well, look at this is evidence. There's a child with her hands taped down. And you say there's a very simple explanation for that.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you've had us on today. It's an incredible thing. We've invited your cameras into the restaurant because people have all of these ideas. And this is, people use social media. This is a picture of my godchild in a completely innocent place, very happily playing with her sister. Her sister's taped her hands. Her parents are there. I put this on my Instagram with their approval right there. It sits there on the internet for a year and a half, and people start building these lies and falsities about innocent people and then spreading this image over the internet.
When people talk about fake news, you know, a lot of folks just roll their eyes like, oh, you know, whatever. People figure it out. The truth is they don't always figure it out. And someone could have been killed inside of your restaurant.
December 4th, Edgar Welch showed up at Comet Ping Pong armed with an AR-15, a revolver, and a knife, determined to find underground rooms and vaults, firing his gun at a door behind which Alifantis says he wouldn't have found anything exciting.
And here is our bags and coat closet. The bullet went into our computer system. the bullet went into our computer system.
Back to the Edgar Madison Welch shooting on the 4th. When Edgar Madison Welch went in there, they tried to say that he shot through a lock and into the computer's hard drive. It just so happened this magic bullet happened to go right through the lock into the hard drive.
Yeah, and that story itself has been confirmed by James Alefanis himself, who wrote in the Washington Post that that's what happened. So they've admitted that's their version of the story.
So it all started last November when the Podesta emails came out. Me and some of my crew, some of the people that I work with, were researching the Podesta emails when they came out. And we found the section on Comet Pizza that had the download section with the zip files. And we ended up getting into those files and found that they contained child pornography. So instead of going out on the internet, which you can't really do, you can't really take that information out on the internet and display the evidence to everybody, you know, as much as you would like to, you know, to say, hey, you know, this is what they're doing. But so, you know, our thought was, let's take it to the proper authorities. And so in late November, we took it to the authorities, the DC Metropolitan Police Department. And when I first called, they kind of gave me the runaround and just kind of pushed my call around, like they would transfer me to another person, make me tell the whole story, and then they would transfer me to another person until basically they tired me out to where I didn't want to tell the story anymore. And I was pretty upset by the reaction that I got from the DC MPD. They seemed like they really didn't want to hear about it. And like I say, they kind of just gave me the runaround.
It was difficult and shocking. Now, our community has rallied around us.
Good.
So we have people coming in. There's families and kids. We're there. We have private security. We're trying to make sure that our staff feel safe, that our community feels safe, that our customers feel safe.
What's the bottom line quickly? What's the takeaway? What needs to change?
I think there has to be some way of breaking these things up. There's no, it's impossible that this news can go from one person to the next in a grand conspiracy theory, and there's no reporting, no ability to do anything.
I know Reddit has banned this topic on its website. I mean, slowly but surely, those who help ban it are trying to dial it back out of the safety, you know, out of concerns for the safety of those who have been endangered by
really, this could happen to anyone.
Not only is he the proprietor of Comet Pizzeria and Ping Pong, Buck's Fishing and Camping, as well as several other establishments, but according to GQ magazine, James is the 49th most influential person in Washington, D.C. Comet Pizza has hosted many Democratic fundraisers and events, with one of those Democrats being Hillary Clinton herself. The Federal Election Commission reports that money was donated to James Alefantis and Comet Ping Pong by Hillary Clinton, amongst many others, and to top it off, even geopolitical major player George Soros, through his Soros American Bridge PAC, sent Alefantis nearly $22,000 at one point. Alefantis' ex-boyfriend is David Brock, an American political agent, author, and commentator who founded the liberal media watchdog group Media Matters for America. Here's Jimmy Comet showing off a pile of pills and bills, and notice in the comments here it says Ping Pong in London. This next post shows James in an article expressing his love for playing ping pong in Germany, as well as in London, at a place called Dr. Pong's, something we'll revisit later. Here's Jimmy Comet displaying three masked children, which was also linked to another very creepy account called Mr. Solier. Not sure who these children are, how old these children are, what this is a reference to, if this is an art piece. Do the children know this is an art piece?
And the craziest... And the craziest fake news of all is something called Pizzagate. People actually believe a conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton and her former campaign manager, John Podesta, ran a child sex ring at a pizzeria in D.C. This is a lie.
Working on Night Cheese also has a kill room at his artist studio, The Pajama Factory, and also has friends who are apparently familiar with the hashtag kill room. Here, working on my night cheese is welding together a coffee-in table, or a coffin table, with that coffin just about fit for the size of a small child. And this image of the back of a van by Mr. Night Cheese is pretty interesting. You can see it seems to be reinforced in the back there, like there's a door or a metal cage or something, and the comment is illuminating. It's like concrete, but plywood, but concrete.
We all know the only people who are trapped in a pizza place are those robots at Chuck E. Cheese. I've seen Westworld. One day they're going to rise up and kill us all. Now, according to the folks with the spider eggs hatching in their brains, Clinton and Podesta have a series of smuggling tunnels that connect to the basement of this pizzeria. But police refuse to investigate the basement crime scene on the flimsy excuse that the pizzeria does not have a basement. That's how deep this goes.
WikiLeaks has released thousands of John Podesta's emails, and after many researchers rifled through them, it was found that there were an enormous amount of strangely worded references to pizza and hot dogs. Needless to say, it is very clear to see that John and many of the people whom he was communicating with are speaking in code. And not only are they speaking in code, but it is the same code that has been well established by the FBI. A few emails worthy of mentioning are here. Here we have an email discussing that the White House is flying in $65,000 worth of hot dogs and pizza. And yes, you could argue that the White House spends a good deal on high-profile events, and thus it is silly to assume that this email has anything to do with child trafficking, but really? 65 grand to fly in hot dogs and pizza? Who flies in hot dogs and pizza? Does this hot dog and pizza catering service have a name? And 65 grand? At the very least, these people are wasting an insane amount of taxpayer money. Oh, and one last thing. It is protocol that all the food served at the White House is prepared at the White House due to worries of contamination and poisoning and the like. So all the food at the White House is made at the White House. So what does this email mean?
So where did this conspiracy theory start? Apparently, some alt-right folks were combing through Clinton campaign emails hacked by Russia and published by WikiLeaks and noticed there seems to be more references to pizza and pizzerias than they had expected, which can only mean one thing: secret sex ring.
This next one is addressed to John Podesta and discusses dreaming of a hot dog stand in Hawaii. Are hot dogs really that good in Hawaii? I've been there and I was never once told about the legendary Hawaiian kosher footlong. What is the name of this hot dog stand? Does this person and John Podesta vacation together? Very odd and very disconcerting knowing what the code word hot dog means. I believe this one comes from Hillary Clinton's emails herself, and it says, "With fingers crossed, the old rabbit's foot out of the attic, I will be sacrificing a chicken in the backyard to Moloch." Enough said.
A lot of uninformed, gullible people fell for the Clinton-Podesta sex ring theory. People like Trump's pick for national security advisor, Michael Flynn, who tweeted out a link writing, "New Hillary emails, money laundering, sex crimes with children, etc. Must read. Introducing it, you decide." Okay, then I decide a guy who spreads this bull shouldn't be in charge of national security.
Here's one from James Elefantis to John Podesta, including the Hillary logo with a pizza incorporated into it. Now remember, this is the owner of a local pizza joint emailing the campaign chairman for a presidential candidate about a logo and saying, "Do not forward it." What kind of relationship do John and James have? How close is James to Hillary? These seem like pretty important questions. Here's one. I'm coming to town and I'm bringing walnuts. And another email here speaks of walnut sauce. Who writes emails to each other concerning walnuts? I guess maybe people that work at the Diamond Nuts Corporation or Planters Peanuts might, but politicians? All of this makes a whole lot of sense when you realize the FBI code walnuts means a young child of color.
I now know all the elements of a pedophile ring. I've had to become an expert in what pedophile rings are. You need a whole lot of elements to have a successful pedophile ring. You need the police involved. You need lawyers, judges. You got to procure kids from someplace. In Portugal, they just busted a national ring about 2 years ago, and they had a state-run orphanage. You have the media involved, so they had top broadcasters and owners of the media, so it would be covered up. I believe they have that in Maine. They had the cops involved, and they had the social workers involved. They got the kids from the orphanage. So in America, you also need a false children's NGO, like Second Mile that Sandusky had. In Maine, it's my belief that the Maine Children's Alliance, run by Dean Crocker, is the Sandusky false front. And what's interesting about Dean Crocker is that not only is he president of the Maine Children's Alliance, he is also the ombudsman receiving federal funds to be oversight for child protection, Dan Despard. So if you have a problem with what Dan Despard is doing in child protection, ostensibly you're supposed to be able to go to the ombudsman, and they're supposed to do an independent review. Well, what they're doing is covering for each other. So Dean Crocker covers for Dan Despard, and they're apparently best buddies.
It takes a lot of research to uncover that layer.
It does.
Who's covering for who. And in the Franklin scandal, Nick Bryan did expose how it went all the way to the feds.
Mm-hmm.
And the feds started coming in to interrupt the private investigator that was hired.
Yeah. They've done that in Maine as well. So Paul Pritchard is the FBI agent in Portland, Maine, and he has absolutely covered up at every step and refused to do his job. And I believe that he's involved in the cover-up. And there was an FBI agent from Boston last year who apparently went up to Portland, Maine, and then decided to commit suicide. Now, what's interesting about this is it was never reported in the Maine papers. There's not a lot of news in Maine. The local clam festival and the jelly-making contest make front page in Maine. So an FBI agent from Boston commit suicide in Portland, it should have been all over the press, and it wasn't. It only made it into some blogs. And that's very concerning to me. So, you know, what I'm wondering is, was he investigating this, and was he murdered for it? Because the last person who tried to blow the whistle on this ring in Maine was a guy named Rod Hotham. And he was an accountant. And he was an accountant for some of these corrupt state legislators and cops and lawyers and state government workers. And he, I guess, had a come-to-Jesus moment. And he decided to bust them. So he called the then attorney general and said that he had massive amounts of evidence of RICO violations and money laundering, and he wanted to break the ring. So the attorney general, and I believe in the state of Maine, the attorney general's office is involved, and I believe the USAG's office is involved. He was put under state police protection, and I believe that the state police are involved. And he was on his way to meet the attorney general. He was seen in the morning with the state police trooper. He was supposed to have, a 1 o'clock meeting with all the evidence. And with something like 10 o'clock in the morning and 1 o'clock, under police protection, he went missing. His body's never been found. And the state trooper pled the fifth. And then the feds brought the money laundering case against Rod Hotham and claimed that he was the only one who was doing it. So it's a nice, neat little circle.
With the Franklin scandal, the hardest part of that was to find victims. And I found victims in projects. I found a victim in a homeless shelter. I looked for a victim in a crack house. I found a victim in prison. And most of these kids were living very, very marginal lives, or most of these victims were living very, very marginal lives. That's what's missing in this Pizzagate is it's incumbent upon citizen journalists to find victims at this point. And victims, and in my experience, getting victims to comment and to go on the record is very, very difficult because we also saw this with Jeffrey Epstein too. These
victims have been with very powerful men, and ultimately they're frightened, and they're told, you know, if you come forward, a number of the victims that I've talked to, you know, were told, if you come forward, you know, not only are you going to put your life at risk, but you're going to put the lives of your family at risk. So it's very, very difficult to get these victims to come forward. And I spent a number of years, you know, finding victims and getting them to come forward. And sometimes it took years to cultivate relationships with victims where they trusted me enough so that they would come forward and grant me an interview.
The scary thing about all of this is that when you start to dig through the endless material on this subject, following a lot of the leads, going down rabbit hole after rabbit hole, a picture becomes very clear. One showing that hiding beneath the world of high art and politics, there is a very devious circle of people engaged in this sort of illegal, wicked, and highly immoral behavior. When this story broke, countless researchers, myself included, scoured numerous accounts on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and uncovered literally hundreds of people engaging one another using these code words, saying things cryptically and posting images related to such behavior. This is not a joke. Literally hundreds to thousands of people discussing this stuff openly. A Twitter account named @eclipse_ow was banned temporarily for releasing a massive Google Doc of 23,000 accounts, including over 500 with their exact geographical locations, of people involved in an enormous child pedophile ring. It has recently come to light that this pedophilia is on YouTube as well, with literally, once again, thousands of accounts discussing this stuff openly, sharing videos of young girls spreading their legs, posing in very sexual or precarious positions, and the like. The comment sections of these videos are littered with perverse and sexually explicit comments about young children, and nothing is being done about it.
And who is Dr. Pizza? That's the online moniker of Mr. Peter Bright, a prominent tech reporter who wrote for Ars Technica. He was well known for his coverage of Microsoft. Mr. Bright is no longer employed by the tech news website following his arrest last month for attempting to solicit sex with a 7-year-old girl and a 9-year-old boy. He was busted in late May by U.S. federal agents in a child sex sting operation. Again, a warning to our parents. Our discussion today contains very raw content taken from the U.S. federal indictment of this ultra-leftist news reporter for ArsTechnica.com. So, Edward, let's start at the beginning. What are the criminal charges against the reporter Peter Bright, known as Dr. Pizza?
Well, the Southern District of New York has brought one count of attempted enticement of a minor to engage in illegal sexual activity. And as you noted, this was in relation to Mr. Bright's discussions with what he thought was a mother of two children, a young 7-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl.
So this was an FBI sting operation.
Yes. So it was an FBI undercover agent posing
pretending
as a mother.
Pretending to be a mother.
Yes. And yeah. I guess, sorry, seven-year-old daughter, 9-year-old son. She claimed she had these two, and she was basically trying to negotiate a price for Mr. Bright to procure the, let's just say, basically get the opportunity to sexually molest what he referred to as teaching these kids. But
okay, so this, what's really bizarre here when I read this federal indictment, is this a website, an app, where pedophiles go to, it's basically a social media platform
yes.
for child molesting pedophiles. It's called Kinked.
K-I-N-K-D, yes.
Is this a website or an app? What is it?
It's a website. It's people go there for reportedly for fetishes and these other things, but pedophiles have been known to use this website to make initial contact
why
with
victims.
Why is
this still?
Why are the apps that pedophiles are using, such as WhatsApp? Facebook's WhatsApp was actually the app of choice here in this case.
So
why are they still
WhatsApp is owned by Facebook, right?
Yes.
So Facebook will shut down conservative and Christian speech.
Yes.
Facebook will not shut down pedophiles using their platforms.
Right.
Am I getting this right?
That's correct.
You got it.
Pizzagate actually comes from the WikiLeaks release of hacked emails from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. In all, WikiLeaks dumped around 50,000 email messages, and it was from those emails that the claims that John Podesta may be part of a child sex trafficking ring come from. Now, to be clear, not one single email in the Podesta emails discusses child sex trafficking or pedophilia. That is a fact. But there are dozens of what seem to be strangely worded emails dealing with pizza and handkerchiefs. Self-described online investigators say that those words in the emails about pizza and the talk of handkerchiefs is code language used by pedophiles. So how did a DC pizza parlor get pulled into the story? Well, again, read any mainstream report and they indicate that Comet Ping Pong Pizza was somehow linked to this fake story and has no relation to anyone involved. But the truth is, that's not true either. What media is ignoring is that the Comet Ping Pong Pizza place is actually referenced in the Podesta emails at least a dozen or so times, and that the owner of that place, James Alphantis, is a friend of John Podesta. He was actually named, this is kind of strange, by GQ magazine as one of the top 50 most powerful people in Washington. Yes, we're talking about a pizza parlor owner. Now let's talk facts here. There is no solid evidence that Comet Ping Pong Pizza is being used to run a child sex trafficking ring. But there are some very strange connections between Comet Ping Pong Pizza and a second pizza place two doors over, Besta Pizza, and the accusations of pedophilia. Now, this is where things start to get strange when you research this story. Now, to begin, I need to show you a 2007 unclassified FBI document. That document, according to the FBI, contains commonly used symbols by pedophiles to express their preference in children. I want you to see these images here. These are the images. Notice this one on the end, the triangle. That image signifies something called boy love. The pizza place next door to Comet Ping Pong Pizza, Besta Pizza, well, this was their logo until only a few weeks ago. Clearly, you can see that the Besta logo actually contains the same image, I'm going to show you again, as that boy lover image. Interestingly, after Pizzagate investigators pointed this out, Besta Pizza changed their logo, and there it is now. They removed the triangle. Also, Comet Ping Pong, owned by Alphantis, is the place where a number of performance artists perform regularly. Two of the groups that perform there, who you can see advertised, by the way, on this Comet Ping Pong poster, include a group called Heavy Breathing and another group called Sex Stains. Well, if you check out the YouTube videos by these bands, Heavy Breathing has songs that do joke about pedophilia. And the band Sex Stains has a video that includes, and you see it right there, that same boy lover symbol. It's nearly identical to the one that the FBI does say is a pedophile code symbol for boy love. As I said, there are some strange things there. As for the owner of the pizza place, James Alphantis, well, he was one time in a relationship with David Brock, who ran Media Matters for America. Well, since Pizzagate began to blow up online, he has made his Instagram profile, Jimmy Comet, private. But an archive search of Instagram reveals a number of strange photographs and words with strange and disturbing images associated with them. Look, to the point where we can't show you those pictures. We're not even going to describe them to you because some viewers would find it too disturbing to share on TV. Now let's talk about the Podesta brothers, because remember, it was John Podesta's email that was hacked. In those leaked Podesta emails, John Podesta talks about his close relationship with Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House, who was recently sentenced to 15 months in prison for abusing boys years ago. He was referred to by the judge as a serial child molester. According to the Washington Post, visitors to Tony Podesta's home in Falls Church got an eyeful when they walked into a bedroom at the Podesta residence hung with multiple color pictures by Katie Grannon, a photographer known for documentary-style pictures of naked teenagers in their parents' suburban homes. And to be clear, that just begins to scratch the surface of how strange some of this stuff is. And bear in mind, we can't get into a lot of the real details of it because of the limits on broadcasting this on television. But it is some very strange stuff. Now keep in mind, again, there is no proof here that there is a child sex ring being operated out of a DC pizza parlor. Investigators have already proven there's nothing to the story, right? Well, actually, no. And that's what you need to know. For all that is here, there has not been one single public investigation of any of this, not from local police, not from the FBI, no one.
Well, Gary Caradore ran a very large detective agency. He was a state investigator for the Nebraska State Patrol, which is basically the Nebraska State Police. And he retired from that, and he founded an investigative agency, which numbered over 100 employees. And he was a great investigator. I mean, there were very few people in the country that had his skills. I mean, his specialty, the thing that he really loved to do, was to find runaways that had become enmeshed in, like, prostitution. And he would dress up as a priest or a plumber or whatever it took to retrieve victims. And so he was, like, the perfect guy to tap for this type of investigation.
Do you think that really that was very unsettling for the FBI, who were involved in this cover-up?
Well, the FBI harassed Gary Caradore unbelievably, and they also tapped his phones.
Tapped, and they followed him around.
And his house was broken into, and his vehicles were tampered with. But Gary Caradore really believed that children in the United States shouldn't be abused with impunity. I mean, he really believed that. He was a very solid, moral, ethical individual. And he believed that children in the United States shouldn't be abused with impunity. So despite the FBI harassment, despite the Department of Justice harassment, he kept finding victims and videotaping them. And ultimately, he achieved a critical mass of evidence. But he was still the hunted. I mean, the FBI was still coming after him. The Department of Justice was still coming after him.
Mess with the witnesses and victims, and to slow him down and stop him ultimately from finding some of the crown jewels in the evidence, which are those photos of the victims at the parties, right?
Yes, most of the victims that were interviewed said that they had been photographed. That this was not only a child prostitution network, but it was also a child pornography network. And the victims that had come forward, and then the victims that didn't come forward, who I have subsequently talked to, a number of them talked about being photographed. And Gary Caradore ultimately realized that because these grand juries were so corrupt, because the FBI in Omaha was so corrupt, and because the Department of Justice in Omaha was so corrupt, that he was going to have to find irrefutable evidence to really nail this story, to really bring it home. And in Chicago, I've got 5 corroborations in my book that in Chicago he did come by pictures of this pedophile network, pictures taken at this party. And he was flying his plane back to Nebraska, and it mysteriously broke up over Lee County, Illinois, and he was killed and his son was killed. And those are 2 of the mysterious deaths in the book. But there are other very mysterious and macabre deaths in the book, too.
The photos, the briefcase?
The briefcase and the photos were never recovered. And the evidence was really combed through. And it's the National Transportation Safety Board said pilot error caused Gary Caradore's plane to disintegrate in the middle of the air. The whole investigation of Gary Caradore's death is very suspect. And in the book, I show a number of things that don't make sense about that investigation.
What I had hoped to be able to do was establish an online database accessible for everybody about every child pornography arrest, which would start to collect and aggregate and analyze the data so that we could say, out of 20,000 arrests in America at the federal level of child pornography, this percentage included infants, and the average age was this. So we don't even have, for federal arrests, any kind of aggregated data. But I would need funding for that. I'd need a university position and staff back, and nobody's been willing to offer me that yet.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was wondering, right, is it a way maybe that flyers could be passed out, like, anonymously, you know, asking the public, would they like something like that to happen to their children? You know what I mean? Maybe something that would shock them.
Well, the problem is that people don't think it's going to happen to their children.
Right.
That's the problem.
That's right.
And in my book, I talk about there's a victim named Alicia Owen who came from a very religious family, and she rebelled at a relatively young age. And a lot of kids from very religious families rebel.
Right.
Alicia was too naive to be able to distinguish the wrong crowd from an evil horde.
True.
And she fell in with this network. And actually, I mentioned her in passing briefly. She was the kid that refused to recant her abuse. A state grand jury indicted her on 8 counts of perjury, and a federal grand jury indicted her on 8 counts of perjury. She was potentially looking at 300 years in prison because she refused to recant her abuse. And she ultimately was sentenced to between 9 and 15 years. And at this point, she was 21 years old. She was indicted when she was 21 years old. And she had been molested since she was 14. And she was sentenced between 9 and 15 years in prison for perjury, a kid, 21-year-old kid, and she spent 2 years in solitary. And her brother...
And he had no fault.
She was... You can read my book. I get into the grand jury, the state grand jury that indicted her on the 8 counts of perjury, and then I show what a kangaroo court her trial was. I mean, her trial is the biggest section of the book, because both the state and the federal grand jury in Nebraska had said that there was no abuse and indicted Alicia Owen. So for these grand juries to be sanctified, they had to go after Alicia Owen, and they had to get her. They had to find her guilty. And actually, CBS lent a helping hand in crucifying Alicia's character, CBS. So it's the amount of power not only amongst the government, but within the media that went into vaporizing this is kind of mind-boggling.
It goes to show you how far the black hand goes, huh?
The black hand goes very, very, very far.
Pitiful, man.
It's very sad. It's a very sad commentary.
You know, but I really appreciate your courage, you know, and I look forward to reading that book myself.
KAVV 97.7 FM, The Cave. It broadcasts a classic country format out of the town of Benson and bills itself as Southeast Arizona's most powerful radio station. The public service announcement basically warns people about downloading child pornography to not get caught and to put it on an external drive. Let's have a listen to that.
Okay. In many cases, the penalty for possession of pictures is worse than the penalty for murder. You should understand that your internet provider could report you to the police if they catch you looking at a website featuring naked juveniles. The police then enter your house and seize your computer. If you have such material, you can save yourself and your family a ton of grief and save the taxpayers of Arizona a lot of money by never storing such pictures on the hard drive of your computer. Always use an external drive and hide it where nobody will ever find it. Likewise, never keep paper pictures, tapes, or films of naked juveniles where anyone else can find them. A public service message from the Cave 97.7 FM.
It's not an addiction, it's a crime. And these people should not be given therapy. They should be given jail time. And also, chemical castration is an option that should be seriously considered. I mean, I've seen some court cases where pedophiles have offered to chemically castrate themselves. And I think that that's a very, very important, you know, option to consider in the criminal justice system. In terms of the fox guarding the hen house, it's really simple. It's if you are a pedophile, you will dedicate your entire life to setting up a secure supply line of children to abuse. These guys are prolific abusers. They don't just rape one or two children. They rape hundreds and hundreds of children, and children age and grow up quickly. Children also get killed when they're engaged in horrific torture that actually kills the children. So they're disposable children and they're vulnerable children that pedophiles want constant access to. I've seen the arrests of prominent heads of pediatric oncology units at places like Hershey's Children's Hospital and Boston Children's Hospital. And again, to the uninitiated in this crime, at first I was horrified. You know, imagine your three-year-old daughter has terminal cancer, and that's already a horrific concept for any loving parent. But then imagine that the pediatric oncologist that you're trusting to help take care of your child is actually raping your child. What are all the ways that you could access children? And then you think about, what is a career that I could craft for myself that would allow me daily access to vulnerable children to rape? Those are the careers that pedophiles populate. So daycares is very popular, pediatricians, pediatric oncologists, child psychologists, child protective services, humanitarians who work with child refugees or children who have suffered already rape in war zones, like Joel Davis was doing, primary school, secondary school teachers, huge. It's huge within our education system.
Dr. Handrahan, can you tell listeners about your research into how many local and state police officers have been arrested for child pornography-related charges?
That just really... So I stopped counting because this research, I've been doing it unpaid and by myself. So at a certain point, I just can't do it anymore because it's incredibly painful and very depressing. So I have, a little bit over 100 examples of police officers. And again, when you start to look at any cohort, what you immediately start to see is that typically it's not the low-level guy who's doing it. It's the top guy. It's the police chief. So I had to make a separate section for police chiefs and sergeants and lieutenants and deputy police chiefs, because those were the guys who were being arrested overwhelmingly, not the officer, uniform officer on the street, right? The military, too. If you look at the military arrests, which I have up, you're seeing it's the top military guys being arrested over and over. Another mainstream media investigation that was outstanding was AP, Associated Press, and I referenced this in the book, did an amazing year-long investigation into child sex abuse, including child pornography, in the military. And they came up with the same results that I did, that it was the leadership.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.